Maybe I'll just, can I just put this anywhere?
Okay. If you can find a place.
So, if we could start by, if you could say a little bit about yourself, just your name and what you do.
Okay. Yeah. I'm Barbara Criswell. Mm-hmm. I'm the owner of Aquarius. It's a New Age metaphysical store in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I started it in 1989, so we just celebrated our 25th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. And if you had to, I guess, identify yourself as anything in particular, religiously speaking or spiritually speaking, what would you use?
Yeah, I would classify myself as pagan. Mm-hmm. Pagan incorporates so many different things that it's kind of broad, because probably 80% of the people who say they're pagan classify themselves as Wiccan.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that's quite accurate for me, but I certainly do see myself as nature related. Spirituality.
Is that primarily how you would define pagan? How do you?
Yeah, let me give you a little flyer that I did for another college thing.
Okay, yeah.
And it really, I think it's important right now. I'll be right back.
All right.
And this, as I said, I...
Could I put that up on the site that I'm making, actually? Okay.
I'll have to track it down, because it may be on... It appears it's on another computer. But yes, I feel that it's accurate, that most people that self-classify themselves as pagan would head nod with it.
Yeah.
And it might not be everything exactly that they do, but in the big concept... they would agree that these things. It was things like nature-related, both God and goddess, direct contact rather than through a intermediary of any sort, no one holy text, self-directed.
Yeah.
It was those kinds of things. So I'll track that down and give it to you.
Okay, that'd be great. Well, I guess, did you have any prior religious background before?
Yeah, I've always, from childhood, was very interested in religion, and seriously studied Christianity. And there came a point when I felt that the it just didn't fit for me.
Yeah.
The things that I read in the Bible and the things I'd been taught... just didn't make sense. There were too many things that just didn't, I just couldn't reconcile.
Yeah.
So I first went to Unity, School of Christianity, because that was a still Christian, but yet allowed more metaphysical input, allowed more direct access. Mm-hmm. And so that really was my pattern, or my the way I changed was from Christianity through Unity, and then to the next step of a little more direct access, a little more a little more nature-centered.
I didn't realize that Unity was Christian at all.
It's in the name, the Unity School of Christianity.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, I guess then what happened that you started getting into I don't know, something that looked a little more like paganism.
Okay. I started the store is really the thing that
that
kicked it to the next level.
Yeah.
In fact, I was still going to Christian churches when I started this store,
mm-hmm.
Even though I knew that I was not comfortable mm-hmm. with what was going on in them. But the more I was in the store, the more I realized that that was not being true to me
mm-hmm.
to be there. Mm. But it really was being in the store and being around the customers that are here.
Yeah.
Working with stones, for instance,
mm-hmm.
that made me self-identify differently.
Mm-hmm. And what was the impetus to start the store then?
I'd been the vice president of marketing for a life insurance company,
okay.
and they were bought by GE, that was bought by Temple Inland, and so in all that,
mm-hmm.
They were moving the company yeah. from here to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have gone there. They offered me my choice of several jobs and then asked if I could write my own job description.
Yeah.
But the voice in my head said they won't be there a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose not to go. And while I was looking for things to do, this was something I knew that I could start a little nature-centered mm-hmm. store. And that would be fun, and
yeah.
and there were potentials for it. And mm-hmm. I didn't fully understand at the time,
mm-hmm.
that more and more people were using stone energy and crystals.
Yeah.
And it just was an opportune time
mm-hmm.
to be starting a store that I was thinking of as a nature store,
yeah.
and one that was fossils and collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden there was this additional market
mm-hmm.
to the New Age pagan community
mm-hmm.
of stones and crystals.
And so when was the store started? How old is it at this point?
April 1st, 1989, and just had our 25th birthday.
Wow.
So this is our 25th year in business.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you were still involved with Unity then when you started the store?
No.
No?
No, I had 10 years in between.
Oh, okay.
I was at Unity, then 10 years I was in... the insurance company.
Okay.
And I'm 75, so I've got a lot of years here.
To keep track of.
Yes. And so 25 years here.
Okay. All
right. So I started the store when I was 50 years old.
Oh, okay. Wow.
25 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. But, were you working for Unity then? Or
no.
No.
I was at Unity for 10 years.
Okay.
Before I was... in the insurance business.
Oh, I see. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
And there I did, I was at We Wisdom School, mm-hmm. and also I did a lot of writing for the magazines.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what Unity is, actually?
Unity is a way of, a metaphysical way of studying Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
They incorporate meditation, they incorporate spiritual healing,
mm-hmm.
But while I've not been directly involved with them in a few years, I still think they would still consider themselves as Christian, even though they employ, they encourage healing, for instance, with prayer, using affirmations in order to bring in what you want to create in your life.
Well, what does your practice look like now then? What are some components?
Okay. The things I do now,
mm-hmm.
I've very intensely studied it with the indigenous people in both Mexico and in mm-hmm. Peru, and I'm a priestess and a curandero, both of the Mayans in Mexico and Guatemala, and with the Pachacuti Mesa tradition in Peru.
How did you find these people? How did that happen?
Well, those things that go beyond coincidence. I had the store, and one of the leading elders
mm-hmm.
of the Itza Mayan in Mexico
mm-hmm.
Had just written a book that had been translated into English.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of doing a tour of the United States and was at Cahokia Mounds in St. Louis doing some work there, And a mutual friend met him and brought him back to her house in St. Joseph and called and asked if I'd be interested in doing a book signing for him. So I'd never heard of him or his book, but I said, well, sure, of course, I'd love it. And it was really just very short notice, but we put the word out, and the night he was doing his little talk, there was a huge crowd.
Yeah.
He was really well received. And he talked about his book and about the Mayan belief. And of course, this was way, way before all the 2012 stuff. This is years before that. But people really enjoyed hearing him. And as he finished, I was talking to him and said, doing all the polite conversation stuff, you know. So I'm so glad you came here, and there was such a nice crowd, and you did a wonderful presentation, just that polite stuff. And while I was doing that talk, I could see my mouth doing all that and hear the conversation, but I felt and saw the two of us on the top of this hill with the grass blowing and the wind blowing and the sun shining, and he was talking. And I turned to him and I said, Hunbats, what are you doing? And he said, I'm teaching you. So that was my first introduction to the Mayan shaman and the Mayan indigenous teachers, Hunbats Men of Mexico City. Mm-hmm. He's a professor at the university there, but also one of the leading elders of the Mayan Council.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, there were some opportunities to go and study with him in Merida, and I did that. Still would do it. I haven't gone a couple of years, but I still would do that.
Mm-hmm.
But learned with him there. And then with Don Alejandro, who is one of the leading elders in Guatemala. And his group is the Itza Mayans in Guatemala, in the highlands of Guatemala. And he was one of the representatives to the United Nations.
Okay.
So very accepted as and respected as a teacher. So I studied with him in Guatemala. So that was the Mayan part. And I've got credentials that they look at, fireball carrier and solar sister and those kinds of things that, that are credentials in their systems. So then a mutual friend here in town had been studying with people from the Peruvian tradition. And the group offered a 2-year apprenticeship program, and I took that, and was just amazed at how similar the two belief systems were and the practices were. So it was just a really a wonderful affirmation, confirmation that this was a belief system I didn't have to make apologies for. Because I found in Christianity, I was saying, well, this verse is okay, and we'll believe it, and we'll act by it, but this verse we just kind of ignore or explain away. And so I was really grateful to find a path that I could follow and not have to make explanations for or rationalizations for.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, what kinds of practices are involved in those paths, or what kind of training did you have to undertake?
There's a lot of similarity between the Mayan practices and the Peruvian practices and Native American.
Okay.
So many of the same of the things that people are familiar with the Native American practices are also in the others, maybe slightly different in how they're done, but the meanings behind them are much the same. Ritual. Group or personal, using stones or natural things as a part of that ritual, symbolizing powers, being open to personal messages from spirit, using sage, for instance, for cleansing and protection, smudgy. So a typical ceremony, and I think maybe that's what you're asking about for the Mayans. Okay, now, the Mayans are really 30 different groups. Saying Mayan is like saying Native American.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the Itza would have one way of doing it, like maybe the Mandan would have one way of doing it. That would be a little different from what the Hopi might do.
Right.
But they're all Mayan. They're all Native American.
Yeah.
So if I were talking about the group from Yucatan,
mm-hmm.
which is about two-thirds of the Mayans, the largest group.
Okay.
If they were going, the most important ritual they would do mm-hmm. would be to have a cloth. Now, I don't want to tell you more than you want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Go on.
Because of the persecution mm-hmm. of the Mayans by the Catholic Party
mm-hmm.
In Mexico, they had to be very secret about their religions.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be Catholic in Mexico. So they carried on their practices very quietly, very secretly,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't have a church. They couldn't have a meeting place.
Right.
So the custom, and they even called, rather than calling their religion, they called it the custom,
mm-hmm.
Was for a group of people to get together and then take all the tools they needed and carry them into a place where perhaps they'd done ritual for thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
But a secluded place in a mountain or by a stream or especially a cave. I think a cave had water in it. It was especially sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And these are places where all the people came. They might not come at the same time, but they would use this sacred place.
Mm-hmm.
And often you had to walk some distance to get to it because they really needed the secrecy.
Yeah.
And each person would carry something different that would be used in the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So one person would carry a gourd of water, and another person would carry sage for smudging, and another person would carry the altar cloth.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else would have a drum.
Yeah.
Then if they were fortunate enough to have someone who was a fireball carrier,
mm-hmm.
almost always a woman, doesn't have to be, but usually a woman,
mm-hmm.
And she would have the sacred copal, which is an incense, in a bowl, and that was used if they had someone that mm-hmm. could do that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She would take precedence over the priest if they had, and they were more likely to have a priest than a fireball carrier.
Mm-hmm.
If she was there, she would have precedence over the priest,
mm-hmm.
and everyone would walk into the thing. Then they'd lay the cloth on the ground and have something to represent each of the elements, the four directions of the four elements.
Okay.
So east would be the color red and fire,
mm-hmm.
and there would be a candle, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and west would be black and water.
Okay.
So there'd be it's important that things be very natural, so you wouldn't use plastic.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't use, and these were poor people, so things were not ornate. They were just, so it was likely to be a gourd with water in it.
Yeah.
North is white, and that's spirit,
mm-hmm.
And that would be a feather or a musical
mm-hmm.
instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And south is yellow, and that's earth,
mm-hmm.
and that's flowers that were picked along the way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little dish of beans or corn.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the center, which represents the column of energy that goes from the great central source down through the earth and then down into the earth,
yeah.
and by the same energy,
yeah.
it would do the same thing through us.
Okay.
So we are connected with the great central source.
Yeah.
The creator is Hanabku.
Mm-hmm.
Hanabku is the faceless one. He's recognized as an energy rather than a personification.
Mm-hmm.
He who gave time and measurement would be one way of defining that.
How do I spell that?
H-U-N-A-B-K-U.
Mm-hmm.
And different, since there's so many different dialects within the Mayan, you might find it spelled a little differently if you go to a different translator, but
mm-hmm.
that's the most common one.
Okay.
So the purpose is to unite, the purpose of a Mayan
mm-hmm.
is to unite with this eternal source.
Mm-hmm.
And it's seen as pulses of energy that come from the great central sun,
mm-hmm.
from the creator space, which is Hanabku.
Okay.
So while they have what has been translated as gods and goddesses, it's really much more in the Hindu sense that Brahma is the creator source, and then you have Shiva and all the others as that are defined as deities or gods and goddesses, but in fact they are aspects of the creator source and a way of understanding creator. So the Hindu, there's a huge amount of similarities with Hinduism, which makes no sense at all, but it's true. So for instance, the east, which is the sun and red, the personification or the god that would be that would be Kanicha Hau, father-son. And while they might address and talk to father-son and even make prayers to father-son, Kanicha Hau, there's always that knowledge that it's an aspect, not creator. This is a way of understanding it. It's a way of making it more accessible.
It's an interface, kind of.
And there would be many of those. And when you talk about Mayan gods and goddesses, that's what those are.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I give you what you wanted?
I think. Well, so when you were training with them, how did they train you? I guess
it's by experience.
It's just by experience.
There's no
written
things.
Yeah.
You can't take notes. You can't take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You listen and you do.
Yeah.
So there's none of this is written down. I think I may well have the most complete written down thing so far as rituals go.
I see. Just your own notes reconstructed afterwards, basically.
So when people ask if there's a book they can read, there's not.
Yeah. It's all just...
It's all...
you've got to learn with somebody.
And it's oral teachings.
Yeah. So do you feel like, I don't know, do you feel like land is important for you then? Is it important for you to visit these places? Or is it a very sort of mobile kind of spirituality?
I did go there.
Right.
But I don't know that you have to go there to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a different experience, though.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said from visiting any sacred sites.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone to others in addition to the ones in Guatemala and Mexico.
Right.
You know, I've been to Egypt and Ireland and other places visiting sacred sites. Perhaps if you felt that your spirituality had to be absolutely, authentically pure, maybe then you have to go to that place. But if we find our spirituality in any of those places that other people have recognized it, then maybe you find it in, you know, in the Ozarks in Missouri or, you know, the Rockies or wherever you are.
Yeah. So you use these teachings in your life, you know, here in
Absolutely.
Kansas City. And,
I think that any spirituality has to... be a way of life rather than a ritual with a group.
So how is it integrated into your daily life?
For instance, the Mayans in seeing one another, I would say to you in Lakesh, and it means I see divine in you, and your answer is Allah Kim, I am another you. So I think that's the key thing, seeing that everyone and everything is divine. There isn't anything that isn't of creator. So that changes my respect and my love and my appreciation of everything and everyone around me.
So it's like an ethos for living. So let's see. That touched on a lot of things. So I guess what kinds of so you get a pretty broad span of customers.
Yes.
In here, though.
Yeah. My goal from the very start was to help people find the tools they need for their own spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be, I won't be seen as a mentor or a, the one who has the teaching, but rather what's important to you and what do you need right now and how can I help you find the tools or the resources you need for your own study.
Yeah.
So we've got many things on Hinduism and Buddhism and Native American, and as well as the things people think more traditionally as pagan, Wiccan or Ashtaru or the Celtic religions.
And do you see the sort of impact on the community that the store has?
I think we've created a community.
Yeah.
We've created a place where people can feel that they are not outside. That they can come here and be inside a welcoming community, no matter what their faith is, no matter what their belief is. It seems to me that originally, Wicca especially, attracted people that were disenfranchised. Women were especially powerful in the start of witchcraft, Wicca, as a religion, because of that inequality and discrimination. And so that also made it available, not quite the right words, but made it accessible to the other people that felt they didn't fit in for some reason or another. Their beliefs weren't the same as the Judeo-Christian. And so by that, and the need and the discrimination against people that don't fit in with the Judeo-Christian beliefs, this has created a community, and especially I think since we aren't Wicca only, we're not because always the whole intent was to be the resource provider rather than the teacher.
Are there other sort of communities that have been important for you while you've been here that are formed around other things that are religious or spiritual? And you've talked about unity and...
Okay, I'm not quite sure where you're, what response you're wanting here. Okay, rephrase it if you would please.
I guess I'm wondering if there are other religious or spiritual communities that have been important for you.
Okay, for me personally or for the community?
For you personally.
I'm not coming up with a one because each thing you work with is a piece that you put into your own jigsaw puzzle. You know, another flower in the bouquet. So I'm a director of the Greater Kansas City Interfaith Council. That's an inspiration, a multicultural inspiration, just being with people that are open and receptive and seeking and encouraging. So that's a piece. The Heartland Spiritual Alliance is a pagan tradition of 30 years probably here in Kansas City. And while I'm not an active member in it, I certainly am involved in the community of it, as well as Pagan Pride Day. So rather than one, I think that we pick the flowers from each one of these and bring them in, if that fits, if that's...
Well, can you tell me a little bit more about the Interfaith Council and what you do there?
The Greater Kansas City Interfaith Council has members from, 15 probably different groups there. They meet several times. They have different committees that meet several times a month. The council itself meets once a month. Through that, there are multiple activities in the Kansas City area. There are book discussion groups. There's teaching things of different sorts. They have a speaker bureau. There's an interfaith Thanksgiving meal.
Oh, yeah.
There's quarterly, there's a different church, a church means a building,
mm-hmm.
a different denominations within it, a different religion will sponsor either a potluck or serve a meal
yeah.
and invite everyone in the world in
mm-hmm.
and do something to help them learn about that religion.
Mm-hmm.
So not too long ago we went to the Hindu temple.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
On Blackman Road, wherever that is.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think
up that
yeah.
way. And they served Indian food
right.
to the group, and then had some music and some dance and some prayers and things that are part of the faith,
mm-hmm.
and then a tour of the building to show how people there celebrate. And so that's done several times, four times a year, I guess. The most recent one was the Ubuntu group over on Troost,
mm-hmm.
and it was a more pagan yeah. thing that time, but each specific to that religion,
mm-hmm.
and a chance to get people into experience
mm-hmm.
it. So there's that. The Table of Faiths is another thing they do, which is it started out as a fancy dinner in a hotel,
mm-hmm.
And a way of awarding things to people within mm-hmm. the community, the city,
yeah.
That have done special things, but mm-hmm. also a way to bring people in, because each of the faiths would have their own little booth
yeah.
and handouts, so that anyone who came could pick up information and get information about any faith that they were interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens every year too.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are two things going on right now that I'm personally involved in.
Okay.
One is we had a project to work with the Kansas City Library to collect money, and then there was a matching fund, and the Plaza Library now has bought the books with it and did special bookcases for it
mm-hmm.
for an interfaith library.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And that'll be... that'll be introduced next. The Human Spirit Library on the 17th will be the dedication of it.
Oh, wow.
But they're having a problem.
Huh?
They put the books on the shelf and people are taking them. I mean, checking them out.
Oh,
checking them out.
Okay.
So that now the shelves look
bare.
So it'll
look very bare.
Yes.
For a good reason.
Whenever
yeah.
they dedicate it. But the idea was to have a place where people could go and browse them.
Uh-huh.
Now, many of these books would be in other places in the library, too.
Yeah.
But this puts them all in one place so you can look in one place
yeah.
for different ones. So that's being dedicated.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm working, and this is a little bit more personal than the Interfaith Council.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with the Nelson Library, Nelson Atkins, to...
Barbara, you have a call on line one. Barbara, line one.
Just a second. I'm expecting one from our insurance people. Hello, this is Barbara. Oh, yeah. Can we do something real fast? Oh. Oh, well, that's a nice offer. Yeah, we're doing pretty well. Why don't you give me your phone number, and if I find we're desperate, I'll be sure and do that. Got it? Mm-hmm. Okay. With the Nelson, we're organizing some tours of special events at the Nelson, where the docent that leads it, rather than giving a history and talking about techniques and color harmonies and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
Really looks at the spirituality of what was going on with it.
Okay.
So there's a Native American exhibit coming up the middle of September going to January, the world-class one.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this case, for instance, they might look at a modern beaded shoe and compare it with an ancient moccasin that was beaded. So what was going on with the people, and why is this?
Yeah.
So it's looking at art as the spirituality of it rather than the techniques of it.
Okay.
So we've got 5 tours set up for that. And it's open to the public, but we promote it through the Greater Kansas City Interfaith Council, as well as the director's religions.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I guess I need to ask, have you ever experienced any problems, or has the store ever experienced any problems just for being what it is?
Well, you'd think so, but no.
No?
Yeah.
That's good.
We have been openly pagan from the beginning.
Yeah.
And there was a time I was more concerned about it than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we've never been picketed, we've never been criticized, we've never had bad press.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's been just the opposite. Television stations have seen us as a resource. And so we've been interviewed at times that I think we've made a very positive information to help.
That's great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just amazing. And it really was brought home to me when I was awarded a couple years ago. There you go. There. One of the 25 outstanding small businesses in Kansas City that hire less than 25 people.
Okay.
So I never expected a store like this to be acknowledged by the suits.
Right, yeah.
I wouldn't see.
This mainstream award.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I really saw that as a validation.
Yeah.
That rather than being the outsider that I expected,
mm-hmm.
we were being awarded, rewarded.
Yeah.
Instead of being criticized.
Mm-hmm.
Another nice story. I'm very friendly with the pastor then. He's retired since then at the Baptist church next door.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he was doing a talk on and using a quote from some New Age author.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Now, if you want to get this book, go to the church next door. Aquarius has it for you." So rather than being criticized, we have really good relations with the three churches that are right here. There's the Baptist church next door, a Methodist church behind us, and a Catholic church right next door.
And do you think there's any particular reason for that, or just?
Boy, I don't know. The churches have all been here for a long, long time.
Yeah.
The Methodist church, in fact, was used as a hospital for the. During the Battle of Westport, it was right here, and the injured people were taken to the church right behind us. The one next door is not as old. It was built in the early 1900s, if I remember right, by the Jewish people, not Jewish, by the Swedish people in Kansas City. I don't know the history of the Catholic Church. So I think that, you know how churches kind of cluster together in the city?
Mm-hmm.
I think that just happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty much, I think we've covered basically all the questions that I wanted to ask, unless there's anything else you want to say.
No. Is there anything I could clarify? I get rambly, I know.
No, I don't think I think that's
Did you get
clear.
What you needed for what you're doing?
I did, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And I have no problems with you with
putting this up.
Whatever I've got.